best friend for supporting our annual fundraising campaign. Thank you from the bottom of our musical hearts.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
It has become known in scientific circles that energy is at the core of everything. It is the currency of existence. But like the air we breathe, we take it for granted. To most people, it's invisible. And just like germs were invisible to us before the invention of microscopes, we now have technology for measuring some of the energies that were once invisible. Science can answer many questions about how and what. However, it does not always tell us why. Why do we do what we do? Why do we have breakdowns and breakthroughs? What is at the core of spiritual experience? What makes us anxious or depressed? What makes us fall in love or continually avoid falling in love? Today, we'll be exploring some invaluable keys to work with the matrix of energy that courses through the mind and body with our guest, Dr. Anodeya Judith. Anodeya Judith holds a doctorate degree in psychology and human health. She is a 500-hour registered yoga teacher and is considered one of the foremost experts on the combination of chakras and therapeutic issues, and an interpreter of the chakra system for the Western lifestyle. She conducts many talks and retreats and is the author of many books, including Wheels of Life and Charge and the Energy Body, the Vital Key to Healing Your Life, Your Chakras, and Your Relationships. Join us for the next hour as we explore balancing our chakra system for psychological, emotional, and spiritual healing with our guest, Dr. Anodeya Judith. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Anodeya, welcome.
Thank you, Justine. Delighted to be here.
It's just a delight to have you here once more. I know, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are an expert on chakras, and I'd love for you to kind of go back and fill us in on how you first even became aware of chakras and why this was of interest to you as a form of study.
Well, that goes back to the mid-70s when I was studying yoga and reading everything I could on metaphysics and healing. And, you know, I was a psychology major, but I'd gotten fed up with that and left school for a while to study. And I was reading something about the chakras, and this shot of energy went through my whole body. And what I was reading was saying, upper chakras, very good, lower chakras, bad, evil, shut them down. And I just intrinsically knew in that moment, there's something not right about that interpretation. Why would we have a system, such a profound system, as I've come to realize over the years, of seven chakras only to deny half of them? That's not the point. Each one is a stepping stone. Each one is intrinsically important to the whole system. And so it became my life's work to modernize the chakra system, to really look, not only did I do research of the ancient texts, but also, you know, modern psychology and modern science and the things we know now that weren't known then, and put them together to bridge mind and body, heaven and earth, spirit and matter. And I see the chakra system as that, you know, rainbow bridge that connects what has been divorced polarities in our culture.
When I look at it in the way that you're looking at it as I went through your work, I was reminded that how you approach it is that awareness is more than just in our brain.
You know, absolutely.
I was thinking, well, we're such a visual culture, so we sight, or our eyesight, is very important. And our eyes are, the way that they're distributed in our body is up in the upper, that upper level. And we kind of think of it right in front of our brain. So we think awareness, brain. But you're talking about another, that awareness can be all the way through our body. I'd love for you to expound on that or give us some insight.
Well, awareness is really an embodied awareness. We have nerve endings all through our skin. Every square inch of our body is covered with nerve endings that can sense changes in temperature, movement, gravity, pressure. We're constantly sensing our environment through those nerve endings. And the brain, you know, some of the recent research in consciousness, you know, we've thought of the brain as the generator of consciousness, but it's really just sort of the processor of it, that consciousness is throughout the whole body. They've done some studies of the timing it takes a baseball hitter to hit a ball when it's being thrown. And I was just at a baseball game the other night. Those balls go 90 miles an hour. You have to have split-second timing to hit that ball. And they say going through the nervous system for your eyes to send it to the brain and your brain to send it to your hands is too slow. It's not possible. But actually, electrical movement goes through the connective tissue of the body in a whole holistic response, and that it happens that way. So we are really, our brain is a whole energetic experience.
So it's beyond just that thing that weighs, what, 5 pounds or something. It's beyond that. And I'm reminded, as you were saying that, about your analogy of the computer analogy and the different facts of the hardware, the computer, yeah, and the software and the operating system. So that's a wonderful analogy to kind of help us understand.
Yeah, I'm so grateful that we have computers as a way to relate to this and understand that we know whether it's a, you know, laptop or an iPhone, that's your piece of hardware. And onto it, you have installed all kinds of software. You know, if it's your phone, it's your phone number. Numbers in your pictures and your music and all of that. But if your battery goes dead, it's useless until you have a new charge coming through it. So it is the electricity going through the system that allows the software and the hardware to connect. Well, in the same way, I have a body and my hardware happens to be female and, you know, happen to be my height and blue eyes and whatnot. And onto this has been installed tons of software since the day I was born, everything from my name to the languages I speak to the things I remember. And what connects those is the life force energy in me. And what my programming is doing is it's telling that life force where to go in my body and where not to. It's saying, oh, everybody's looking at you. Stand up straight. Put your shoulders back. Hold your stomach in. Smile. Or someone else is talking. Time to be quiet. These are programs that then act on our energy. But they can go even deeper. Oh, I don't want to access my feelings. I don't want to open my heart. Oh, it's not safe to speak up. These are programs too. And they act on the energy and create blocks in the body that take place in the hardware.
I know that you use, you've used a different word for energy, and you call it charge. In fact, that's in the title of your book, Charge in the Energy Body. Charge. Why that word?
Well, charge is something that we can all relate to, you know, and it's the same thing as prana, which is what the yogis call the life force, or, you know, acupuncturists call it chi, Freud called it libido, Star Wars calls it the force. You know, these are all the same thing. But charge is something like when you have a charge on something, you know it. And so I say charge stands for consciousness having a really genuine experience. Because when you're charged up, you're angry, you're upset, you're scared, you're excited, you're thrilled, you're erotically aroused, you know you're having a real experience. And so it is this, and you can say it to a child. You can say, oh, you're all charged up about this, aren't you? Or you can say it to a spouse who's yelling, oh, you got a big charge on this issue. Or you can say it to your therapist, you know, I have a big charge on this. Or, you know, I have a big charge about politics these days. You know, so we have a very common vernacular. And I think if people are going to start understanding their own energy, we need a common language.
So you're really giving some illustrations and examples of a positive charge and a negative charge. So can you please say something about that?
Yeah, so charge is really neutral, but how it goes through your system and the beliefs you have about it can be positive or negative. So, you know, anger can be very destructive or it can be productive. You can say, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. I need to make a change. And that's what you can do with your anger. Fear can paralyze you or it can motivate you. So the charge itself is neutral. But if we think fear is bad, then we say, oh, I'm having fear. I'm having a negative emotion. I don't want to have this. And then I suppress it. So if we take the value judgment off it and we just meet our charge and say, oh, this is life force coming through me. Hello. What do you have to teach me? Where are you trying to go? How can I free you up to become more alive? Then we can embrace our charge and do what I call harvesting it, which means we bring it into our tissues for more aliveness.
So that's a big one, and I know that you mentioned that many times in your whole experience and your whole philosophy is harvesting the charge. And I want you to help flesh that out a bit, harvesting the charge. What does that mean?
Well, most people can relate to charge as an emotional charge. It's not the only kind, but that's the easiest way to give an example. And some people, when they have an emotional charge, they try to suppress it. They lock it up. They go, I don't want this to come up. Other people try to get rid of it. They go, I have to get angry because I've got so much energy right now, or I have to cry it all out. And those are discharges. When I say harvest, what I'm meaning is you neither repress it nor discharge it, but you dissolve the blocks in the body so that that charge can permeate the cells in your body for more aliveness. We're harvesting it the way a farmer will harvest his crop. You get to keep it that way because the charge is golden.
So you're collecting it and keeping it. I'm just wondering if the analogy of sequestering water in the soil.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, you're nourishing yourself with it. You know, which is what a farmer does with their crops. Then they can eat them and they can nourish themselves throughout the winter. So you're actually nourishing yourself. When I'm with a client or someone in a workshop and they are doing this process and they experience the harvesting, they experience it either as a warmth, a relaxation, or a kind of tingling in their body.
We'll talk more about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Anna Dea Judith, and she is the author of Charge and the Energy Body, the vital key to healing your life, your chakras, and your relationships. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, AnnaDeaJudith.com. That's A-N-O-D-E-A, Anna Dea Judith. .com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Anadeya Judith, and she is the author of Charge in the Energy Body, the vital key to healing your life, your chakras, and your relationships. Anadeya, what is your working definition for the chakras? Is it chakras or chakras?
The proper way to pronounce it is chakras, like the hard CH, like church.
Okay, thank you.
And it's a chakras if you said it the way the Indians do. Of course, everybody says chakras these days, so either one is all right. Yeah, my working definition is that chakras are organizational centers in the body for the reception, the assimilation, the storage, and the expression of life force energy. So in other words, we take it in, like you're taking in these words right now. You're assimilating them. You may be translating them into your own inner language, or sometimes people are taking notes as I say this. They're assimilating it. You're storing it. You're putting it in memory somewhere. And you may be go home and tell somebody something about what you learned, and you're expressing it. So we do this on each of the different levels of the chakras. We do it with food. We do it with breath. We do it with emotions. We do it with sights that we see that we take in and store in our memory. We do it with things we learn. So we want a chakra to function properly to do all four of those functions: receive, assimilate, store, and express.
So you can kind of think of like RASE.
Yeah.
Rays,
without
good. The I, yeah, RASE. Okay, and that just how would we then? How does this energy get blocked? Give some examples of how we block this energy.
Yeah, so you know, we have a body that is an organic, has an organic nervous system that is set up to respond to challenges and stimuli, and then we have our programming. And the programming says, don't make a noise, don't be quiet, hold yourself in. And, you know, we get all these commands as we're growing up. Oh, you're too much. Sit still. Be quiet. You know, what's the matter with you? You're always acting out. And then we learn with our mind to act upon our body and its energy to not do that. We're about the only animal that can override our instincts in that way. And that creates a kind of blockage. So that every time, let's say somebody's anger comes up, the same message comes down, oh, it's not nice to get angry. Or don't get angry at your boss, you might lose your job. Or don't get angry at your partner, he might leave you. So the programming then acts on the organic nature of the body, and they're at odds with each other.
I'm just thinking of an example in these days, the Me Too movement. And in that movement, there are many women who have grown up in a whole culture to not report or not make waves or not to resist in some way, to be nice and damp down their feelings of this is not right, or that feeling of, that, oh, I've been violated, but to be nice. So that might be an example.
An example. And so they push down their natural reaction to say, hey, no, buddy, that's not okay. You know, it's not okay to reach into my blouse, or it's not okay to reach under my skirt. And it gets repressed. And then that creates a block. And then the next time it happens, they're still unable to say something because the programming overrides the body's natural response. Now, I don't think the answer in all things is just to let the body have its way. We don't get to say and do anything we want and steal and hit and kill. And, you know, that's not the point. We have the mind for a reason, but they need to be working in harmony.
So let's say in that example, how would we then retrain ourselves to be more skillful?
Well, we have to pay attention to both messages, what the mind is saying and what the body is saying. Now, in terms of the chakras, I see what's coming from the body moving upward. It moves up the spine from the lowest chakra at the base all the way up to the crown. The mind moves downward. We become aware of things. We send thoughts down into our body. I pay attention to my hips and what they're feeling. So these two currents, the upward current, which I call liberation, the current of liberation, and the downward current of manifestation, are simultaneously going on in the chakras. It's when they lock that we have a problem. It's when they are not in accord. So just like getting a car out of the mud. You know, you go forward and backward and forward and backward. And then one of those times you swing out. We have to honor both sides of the block. I want to be seen and I need to hide. You know, I want to be close and I need some space. We have to honor both sides. And by honoring both sides, have them, you know, sit by, side by side and say, well, what's a common solution? What's a win-win solution here?
So that just brings to mind, let's go through a little bit of the chakras and the lower ones. What are they? Just if you can describe them, give us a description.
So these energy centers have locations that they're given in the body. Even though they're not a physical thing like an organ, they have locations. So the first chakra is said to reside at the base of the spine, connects with the legs and feet. And I think of the legs like the roots that go into the earth, because the first chakra element is earth. So they say that relates to our survival consciousness, our instincts. You know, you shiver when you're cold, you sweat when you're hot, you yawn when you're sleepy, you think about food when you're hungry. These are survival instincts that are hardwired into the nervous system. And they're hardwired to for self-preservation, right? Second chakra is more emotional. It's in the abdomen, low back, hip area, genitals. They say it's emotional and sexual. It's the element water. So it's about the flow. Emotions are a flow of charge. We say, oh, that's really moved me. That means something moved inside. I felt the energy moving in my belly or moving up to my heart. So, you know, when we're moved, and actually emotion comes from the Latin word movere, to move, and E meaning out. So it's the moving out of energy. Then in the third chakra, charge arises for the purpose of action. Third chakra is often called our power chakra. It's in the solar plexus. It's the element fire. So it's our vitality, our get up and go. And we want to have that vitality, and we want to have it in a way that we can command that vitality into the action we intend to. You know, when we successfully do what we intend, we say we have a strong will. Right? That's what will is. So charge arises for the purpose of action in the third chakra. In the heart chakra, charge arises for love. And we know that a child receives love from his or her parents, and that's a charge that they're taking in that is as important as the food or the breath they're taking in. And that when we fall in love, we have this high, we're full of charge, that when we have a loss of love, we crash. So there's a big charge in love. In the throat chakra, it is about communication. So we have the charge of our truth. Sometimes when people are about to say something very important and vulnerable, you can see the charge come up in them. Their voice shakes. Their jaw trembles. We have the charge of imagination in the sixth chakra, the third eye. And that's how we see. We imagine and we remember and we dream and we have intuition. Or you might have a hunch about something and have a charge about, oh, I don't know if this is going to be a good thing. And then charge in the seventh chakra is basically awareness. The more charge we have, the more we're aware. So if you really have a big charge about something, you're aware of everything around that. If you don't have a charge about something, it doesn't matter that much. You don't pay that much attention to it. So charge is awareness, and that's our crown chakra.
Let's go back to the third chakra, will. So what does it mean? You spoke about the positive aspects of that power in the center, in the solar plexus. I kind of think of it as Mars energy, warrior, like Mars energy. So what does it mean to be willful, which is a more negative connotation, to be willful? Can you speak about that?
Yeah, well, I think when we're talking about power, we can talk about power over, which is a kind of control or domination. Or we can talk about power with, where all our parts are working with each other. And that, for I think personal power is the ability to channel your energy into productive activity. That you can actually, instead of getting distracted, you can do what you set out to do. If you decide you want to get up every morning at 6 and meditate, that you can actually follow through and do that. That's not easy for most everybody. to follow through with our will. So we can be willful, which is often what a child is told when they're trying to get their own way. You know, oh, you're not going to bed when I say, you're such a willful child. That's actually a healthy sign in a child that they are going to have some will. And so many children get their will broken that then they get in life and they go, well, why can't I follow through on tasks? Why can't I finish school? Why can't I do what I say I'm going to do? Because they didn't develop their will.
You know, one of the memories I have of my childhood was a little rhyme my mother would tell me. She would say, oh, there once was a little girl with a curl right in the middle of her forehead. When she was good, she was
very, very good. And when she was bad, she was horrid. I was told the same thing. And even when my mother was washing my hair, she'd make a little curl while the hair was all sudsy and say, see the little curl on your forehead?
So you're saying that part of that is, like, it's good that if we can use that for the benefit of ourselves and for those around us in a cooperative way, not as just a defiant, just for defiance sake.
Exactly, exactly. And defiance is not really being strongly in our power. It's reacting to something. You say yes, so I'm going to say no. Well, that's not really coming from my own autonomy. You know, so we want to be able to feel our own autonomy, know who we are, know what our game plan is, and be able to follow through. But it's not about dominating other people. I find that the dominating other people comes from a child that was dominated. And then they say, no one's ever going to do that to me again. I'm going to be the biggest, most powerful person in the business, and I'm going to be on top, and I'll never be vulnerable
again. Bullies come from.
And that's where bullies come from. And that creates something I talk about in the book, the challenger-defender character structure. They always have to be on top and be in power. And it comes from a childhood where their will was manipulated by someone or where they were betrayed in some way.
So that's where we really need to pay attention then, how we use that power center and be aware of the beliefs that we have around them, of habits. And I want to talk about beliefs and habits and those things coming up. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Anadeya Judith, and she's the author of Charge and the Energy Body, The Vital Key to Healing Your Life, Your Chakras, and Your Relationships. And if you want to know more about her, you can go to her website, AnadeyaJudith.com. She spells her name A-N-O-D-E-A, Judith, J-U-D-I-T-H.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. And if you get her book, like on her website or wherever, and you let her know, you can get the free downloads of these wonderful exercises that
videos.
You have. Videos. Oh, goody, videos of these exercises that she has throughout her book to help you with these various energies. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe